Hey, book lovers, welcome back for another Adapted here at Book Circle Online. Today, we're talking a very great story, one that has been adapted into so many different iterations. That, of course, is Peter Pan. So stay tuned.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
That's right. Indeed we are. We have Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
What's your happy thought?
Oh, so many. Just us talking about this story is a happy thought.
There you go. I am Phil Svitek. Excited to be here to talk this great book that has just stood the test of time, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so iconic, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Couple of things to note if you're joining us for the very first time. Number one, we are going to be spoiler-filled in the sense that we will reveal what the book is about, the plot, and by extension, the other adaptations, in this case, multiple adaptations.
Yeah.
The other thing to note is we have a rundown. You can follow along. It has pictures, clips, as well as research. It's included in the description as a little zip file. You just download it. It might take a minute. It's a pretty heavy file. And unzip it, and then you get all the goodies, if you will. So, of course, as we like to kick things off, we have to know what our overall impressions were. So, Marissa, what did you think of the book, Peter Pan?
I was really excited to read the book. When I was a kid, I read, like, the abridged kids version, child version of Peter Pan. Always watched the movies, but actually have never read the actual book. So going to it, reading it as an adult, I think I have even more appreciation just for the themes of growing up, maturity. I can understand why Peter Pan wanted to stay a boy and never wanted to grow up. And as an adult, I can understand why it appealed to the masses in that way. So I really enjoyed it. It didn't really deter me from like previous thoughts that I had of the story. I loved it even more.
Yeah, I think that for some reason, the idea of Peter Pan and whatever iteration is just always so fascinating. And to finally get at the source material to see where it all came from. Now, granted, even this book in it of itself was not the original incarnation of it. Right. So Peter has a long history, and the author, J.M. Barrie, it's a very morbid way that he derived towards Peter Pan. And In the book, Peter Pan, which used to be called Peter and Wendy, is actually quite morbid, especially at the end.
Yeah, it's definitely a darker toned version. And I think in the generation that you and I grew up with, Disney has taken over the Peter Pan story and in a way really glamorized it, made it light, made it more fun, took out the darkness. I mean, there are some dark elements, but it's not nearly as dark as what it originally started with. So that I do appreciate, but also just it reminds you of who J.M. Barrie was and his life. It wasn't so happy. And they usually say, like, some of the unhappiest people can make some of the happiest things and stories. And, yeah, I feel like it kind of applies to this.
Indeed. I mean, the common conception is that it goes back to his brother when his brother died at a very young age, in the most tragic of ways, basically being frozen to death in water.
Yeah, it was from an ice skating incident. His brother David fell, cracked his skull, and ended up dying. But it caused like such a rift in the family where his mother was depressed and treated, and J.M. Barrie came from a big family, so he had a big family to take care of. His mother was depressed, he was depressed, and it just kind of took him into a life where he just always wanted to make his mom happy and kind of reverted to always retaining a youth-like innocence.
Then also later on in life, he would end up taking care of a lot of kids that weren't necessarily his own. He kind of became a surrogate father in that way. So children and childhood was kind of a constant theme throughout his, you know, professional career and his life in general. And so, you know, he just found a great fascination with it. And, you know, in the case of Peter Pan, kept retinkering the notion of it through, you know, when we talk about adaptations, he himself made a musical, made a play of it and whatnot. And so, you know, this is the true story of a full adaptation, really.
Yeah. And what I like as an author is that he was always adding to his own story. He was always adapting or really appendaging more to it. And because it started off as a play, and then he added more characters to it after a few iterations. Then he added to and made it into a full book, and then got converted into musical. So he himself even added more to his own story over the years.
Absolutely. And the first sort of notion of Peter Pan was in The Little White Bird back in 1902. Not even, that's almost last century.
Yeah. Like,
anyway, and then kind of it was republished in Peter Pan and Kensington Gardens, so that was 1906, and then this slowly, by and by, came to fruition until 1911, when this finally became a book that it is, and originally titled Peter and Wendy.
Right, and then in between, it was actually after the Peter and Wendy that they had the first stage adaptation of the story, and then after that actually became a full-fledged book. So there were a lot of stages to the story.
Indeed, and it's hard to, you know, when you talk about, like, if you talk about Marvel movies, like what's canon or something like that, Neverland used to be like Neverland, mm-hmm. but then it was shortened to Neverland, and all these different things. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, we are going to go with that this book called Peter Pan in today's day and age is gospel.
Yes, it is canon.
Indeed, that's what we're sticking to. Let's talk about some of your, you know, the interesting part is, not to get too far ahead, but as far as the Disney Peter Pan, it's very true to how the book sort of plays out overall. Like there's, and most adaptations, especially early on, there's not a lot of changes that happen. It's only till kind of we start creating this revisionist Peter Pan version mm-hmm. that we get into a lot of differences from the book to the adaptation.
Right, and I think if we're going to get slightly into the Disney Peter Pan, they actually took out a lot of what's in the book, and they just went from like scene to scene to scene, and they actually added some more dialogue and more different scenes so that children who are watching the film can actually understand it better and understand the timeline of, oh, this is how Tiger Lily got captured when this event was also happening with the Lost Boys. And it, like, it really set up a better visual timeline for children to understand what's happening at what time. And that I actually appreciate. It added more to the story and more understanding.
One of the things I was actually quite surprised at with was the timeline in the book. Like, it was pretty much like months that they stayed in Neverland. They leave. It's a very tragic event. And I always took it to, like, they're just gone for, let's say, a week tops.
Right.
But it almost took, like, just a couple of days just to get to Neverland.
Exactly. And I think those are also just, there are so many different rules to Neverland. Time, obviously, is not a guide in Neverland. It doesn't really exist. It's just, it's a place you go to forget growing up, because it's a place where you defy time and maturity and stuff. So, like, it's irrelevant when you get there. And so you don't even think about what else is happening in your personal life when you get there. And granted, these are children who aren't thinking of, oh, I have to go to work the next day. You know, it's not like that whatsoever. So I like the fact that now there are the different rules to Neverland. Time doesn't matter. And then also the longer you're there, the more likely you are to forget your previous life.
Yeah, which kind of, I liken it to if you go on vacation and all of a sudden you make it like a permanent vacation, like you start to forget your old life.
Exactly.
You know, for better or worse, ideally for better. But I actually took that away as part of the, you know, the tone there. And it does explain a lot of things that, you know, throughout, like what's great about a book is that even just through one simple line, it's not exposition. It just kind of, it just explains it. and it's not forceful. Whereas in any sort of adaptation to say something, you know, along those lines of, you know, whatever it may be, kind of feels shoehorned in. But then you're kind of left wondering what are the exact roles. And I appreciate that the book overall laid out everything.
Yeah, and I'm glad there wasn't so many rules, because if there were rules and stuff, then it'd be like a regular world that you're living in. You have to abide by certain guidelines. It's just like living in a regular country. You can have your freedom, but you also can't do X, Y, and Z. So again, that I feel that having rules applies to adulthood, whereas this is just land where you can just be free to do anything, and that reflects of just the freedom and innocence of a child.
Absolutely. You know, ironically, the rules started to come in place when Wendy became the mother.
Yes.
She introduced medicine.
Medicine.
And bedtime.
Bedtime stories. But I like that, because she's at the age where she's mini adult. She's like a preteen. She's old enough to understand the adult-like mentality, but yet still young enough to literally still be considered a minor. She's the in-between. But I liked how she did become a surrogate mother figure inadvertently, because the whole rule of Neverland is to not grow up, but they needed a parental figure to keep the boys in check.
Yes. And Peter liked being a leader, but he really wasn't a leader. In fact, you know, one of the more surprising aspects of the book was how selfish and conceited. In fact, that's made a point. One of the reasons, when you look at the biggest sort of things that has come out in terms of the book, you have Hook and Peter, right? The mm-hmm. age-old rivalry. And it mainly stems because Hook despises Peter for his arrogance.
Yeah, definitely his arrogance. And also in the book stated that there was always a quality about Peter that always irked him, and it was also his cockiness, too. Mm-hmm. And you said Peter, he's kind of like, he is a lone wolf. Yeah, he's not really, like, the kids look up to him, the Lost Boys look up to him, but Peter would like to go off on adventures on his own and not tell the guys where he's going. He can go anywhere because he can fly. He really was his own character, and he flew, I guess you can say, at the beat of his own drum.
Yeah, and the other part, like, as far as the boys, it was surprising that they all could fly, because generally it's just the four of them that tend to fly. The other aspect of it, when they were flying to Neverland, the fact that Peter almost forgot, like, who are these people? Yeah. I was like, what? Like,
oh, yeah, I know you guys. But again, I think it also shows the longer that you are away from Neverland, you do forget where you come from, too. Mm-hmm. Like, the farther away from home you are, the more you forget your home.
Indeed, indeed. And the other aspect that I want to sort of talk about before we start making comparisons, I want to get your thoughts on the ending. Because I felt like the ending, A, just kept going. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like, oh, it was a good lesson. Wendy kind of grew up, and maybe Mr. Darling was remorseful. Mrs. Darling was always just, I'll just use her name, quite a darling. but nonetheless, and then we get this continued version that I don't know how I feel about.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I actually enjoy the ending. The repeating of the granddaughter will now grow up and become the quote-unquote mother to Wendy and the boys and everything, and then the cycle just repeats. I like that in just the folklore of and the legacy of the story, where that can still apply to just books and storytelling, that you can tell this to your grandchild, they'll grow up, they'll tell it to their grandchild, and therefore the story will just keep continuing throughout the centuries, like this story. And I think it's actually pretty smart on J.M. Barrie to be like, this is a story that I hope lasts for years and years and years.
That I can get behind. The fact of, and then Nana, she was dead.
Nana
and
died.
And then, you know, these people died, and he got old and fat, and then they were miserable working at their jobs. Mm-hmm. I was just like, wait, I thought the point was to highlight that growing up didn't have to be so bad. And Wendy, granted, embodies that, like, she's happy, she's married, blah blah blah, that's all well and good, but everyone else is written into this existence of just meekness and despair.
See, I didn't really see it like that. I saw it as that was just, that's the reality of growing up, that Peter has been defying his entire life. That's why he keeps going to Netherland and Neverland, so he doesn't grow up, because when you do get old, you do unfortunately pass away. But if you keep the innocence going within your child, within your grandchild, you still have the ability to keep going back to Neverland.
So really the story is truly about Wendy. Everyone else continues their mistakes, but Wendy knows best.
I mean, you can think that, but my biggest takeaway was that, yes, unfortunately, that is just the sad reality that you do have to grow up. People do, you do have to pass away, but keep your innocence and you can still keep coming back to Neverland.
I feel like we just need to tighten the ending a little bit more. Because okay. I think, yes, we all need to grow up. That's reality. I just don't like the idea that it has to be depressing.
Well, I think the way he wrote it was like, and Nana passed away because she got old. And this person passed away because he got old. Like, I get it. He just kept listing everything that passed away. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that is sad. We got like 5 deaths in 1 page. Yeah, that is sad. So maybe it's just the way he killed off all of the characters so quickly that you don't like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if he just could go back and touch it up to embody the spirit that you highlighted of generations and passing on, that in itself is beautiful.
Okay.
It's, I don't know. Maybe it's because it's contextually, I tie in his life into it, and knowing that he didn't have the happiest of lives, like everything around him just kept dying. I'm like, right. Dude, you're bumming everyone out.
Maybe that's just dashing your Disney ending of a happy ending. Because, you know, when we think Peter Pan, we don't think death. We think happiness. We think life and living and defying death. And then when you actually read the book and you realize, oh, the actual ending has so many deaths, you're like, crap, that does ruin the ending. I can understand why you're frustrated. So maybe it's just like you're not used to a sad ending for the Peter Pan that you grew up with.
And Peter's happy. And so's Wendy. And so's Toodles and Nana.
And Toodles and everybody.
And Mr. and Mrs. Darling and Michael and John and all of them. Anywho. All right, so let's talk about the various things that that go into this book that make it such a spectacle. Number one, I think Neverland in general, like, it's just a mystical place, you know, no different than, let's say, the Bermuda Triangle or the Arctic or whatever, you know, Narnia, whatever fictional place you want to categorize it into.
I don't love all those places, except for the Bermuda Triangle, because I've never been there. What I enjoy about Neverland, because every time we do see it in the movies and television shows and whatever, of any adaptation, we do see the actual island. It is a mysterious island. There are different rules to the island. Some people can fly, some people are grounded, and there are different locations and different spots on the island. Like, the Injuns lived here, the pirates lived here, and no one could find Peter Pan and all the Lost Boys because they had their own hidden place. So, like, I liked how everyone was dispersed throughout. And it's cool every time you see it in the different series of, like, what their take on it. Because it is, it's not really a dark place. It's a place of full of light and color.
Yeah, it generally tends to be tropical. With high trees, lush, you know, the ocean in general, like, you can see to the bottom, you know, no matter how deep it tends to be. Especially, like, when you add in the mermaids into it, you know, that tends to be a very fun aspect of it. And just flying in general.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you go back to, like, the Wright brothers and, you know, at the time that he wrote this, it was always man's dream to fly. You know, now our dream is to make it to space, which we have, but, like, not on a regular take-the-bus type of way for the average person. Right.
Like, travel to space, but also live the tale.
Yeah.
And I like that because it kind of does show just that J.M. Barrie's imagination literally had no bounds, that he could think of a wonderful place where all these different things could exist that didn't exist at the time he was living.
And, you know, he set up one of the most fundamental rules with flying. It takes two things, fairy dust and happy thoughts. And, you know, from that perspective, like, you don't question it. It makes total sense. Okay, think happy thoughts, great. And you need some fairy dust. Got it. Apart from that, you know, and a lot of the things tend to, you know, like, they tend to be maybe, let's say, elongated as far as any of the theater plays or whatever, but just the spectacle of people flying tends to be such a fun atmosphere of it that even though there's not, quote, story happening, it's just fun to watch.
Right, and I've seen different Peter play adaptations actually on stage, and you can tell how people take the flying aspect. Some people actually do are rigged and, you know, are flying by rope and stuff like that. I have actually seen a production where they did a entire backdrop of the London city, but the kids, Wendy and Michael and John, that they're actually on roller skates and they're like pretending like they're flying behind the backdrop or like in front of the backdrop of London. So even that, there's so many people take different creative ways of showing just flying in general because it's fun.
Indeed, indeed. Going back to this idea of Neverland, there is a great video about a real life Neverland and how to find it. If you just type in film theory Neverland in YouTube, it's a fun video. It's about 15 minutes. Now, whether or not I agree with it, I don't know. Whether or not you agree with it, I don't know. But it's worth noting. And you know what? Maybe you might be able to visit the real Neverland.
Okay. Piquing my interest.
And no, it's not in Disney.
Okay. I kind of figured.
Anyway, the other aspects of it, the crocodile tends to be a big part of any adaptation.
I love the crocodile because in some adaptations, it's really scary. It is a terrifying creature, as crocodiles should be in real life. And others, it's like really, you know, fun cartoonish. I'm thinking of the Disney version that's very cheeky in that way. So like, but I like the representation of the crocodile, that even Hook was plagued by time.
Mm-hmm.
Time is something that like always scared him. He was always running away, and it's just the notion that time eventually is after us all.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it, even in a place like Neverland.
Yeah, exactly. The clock is literally chasing them.
Which it was kind of funny to note that in the book, Peter keeps going to the crocodile so he can figure out what the time is. In a place where time really doesn't exist, the fact that we keep having to check the watch, so to speak, is kind of ironic.
Yeah, and it's also good to have Hook has another, you can say, nemesis besides Peter Pan. And it's more of an animal rather than a human boy. Mm-hmm. Or is he really human now? But a mystical boy.
A boy like no other.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking of Hook, I think that's, you can sort of talk about the history of it, but, you know, Hook is the greatest sort of nemesis. When you look at pirates in general, they're so visual and it's fun, and just the term pirates right off the bat indicates, like, nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, most times, unless you're doing kind of like an anti-hero story, pirate means bad.
Oh, yeah. There's always a negative connotation to pirates, but when you actually follow the different pirates under the guide of Captain Hook, there really aren't, they're not bad people. They're just following whatever Hook wants to do. They're really like caricatures in a way. They're very comedic. They obviously don't have a lot of intelligence, so just in that, it's fun to watch them just be goofy. So like I was never really afraid of the pirates. I found them always more comedic characters.
Well, they actually resemble each other quite well, the pirates and the Lost Boys, because, you know, they both have a leader, Hook and Peter.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, they are comedic. The boys in particular, like, what do you think, Toodles? What do you think, Slightly? What do you think, Twin?
Mm-hmm.
And they would just go down the line like this, and it just became a running gag throughout the whole book, which I found funny.
Yeah, and like it could be Hook and his lost men, which are the pirates, and then Peter and the Lost Boys. So like the adults had their group, and Peter Pan had his kids group. I don't think, but it's also fun to see adults play against children,
mm-hmm.
and in a world of Neverland where you're never supposed to grow up, it just makes me question, and it never really explains how the adult pirates got there.
Well, people get there at different stages in life. You know, you exactly. Find your way. There was definitely a lot of killing, too.
That's...
Like, for example, in the fact that he kills Hook, which is such a seminal part of, you know, the story, that he's like, who? Oh, after I kill him, I forget who they are.
Like, what? Oh, yeah. That guy. And I liked it because it was so quick. I actually had to go back and reread the page. I was like, oh, yeah, that's how it happened. Like, he bested him in a sword fight, and then the crocodile eventually got him. So I was like, it is such a quick death where I'm glad, like, it wasn't, like, fully fleshed out, and it was bloody and this. And because kids are reading this, you can't really expand upon a grisly death.
Yeah, but even... I was shocked by, like, when Michael comes back to the first thing he says to Mr. Darling, and it makes a punchline of, thank God Mr. Darling was actually asleep, was, he's a lot smaller than the pirate I killed.
Right. Yeah, I did like that line. He's like, he's not as big as that last pirate. But it also kind of puts things in perspective for the kids, too, that generally the adults... Or, like, the kids were kind of afraid of the adults at the beginning, but then when they go back to the actual adults, they're like, oh, yeah, there's really nothing to be afraid of. Mm-hmm. So I liked how it did change their perspective on things.
Indeed. Can you give us the insight into Hook? Because originally he was not a character, or he wasn't as fully fleshed out as he is in the final version.
So Hook wasn't in the original version. He was added during the stage adaptation, mostly because they needed to add more time so the stagehands on the side of the stage could have more time to flip stages and sets. So if any of you have been in the theater, because I come from a theater background, that is when the curtains go down, lights change, all the furniture change and whatnot to the next stage. That's the turnaround where the stagehands can change the set. They needed more time during certain scenes, so they added the character of Hook, so he can add dialogue while they're doing set changes behind him. And for that just built up another character for the story, another nemesis for Peter Pan.
Yeah, I think it was the more brilliant aspect of this entire story, because he's like the Joker to the Batman, an absolute necessity.
And it's cool to think, because when you think Peter Pan, you automatically also think Captain Hook. But then when you know that little tidbit, you're like, oh, it's weird to think that Captain Hook wasn't originally part of the story.
Mm-hmm. The other aspect between Peter, Hook, and I didn't quite see this, but just the love triangle of Wendy. And some versions apparently go a little bit deeper than that, but most versions have kind of taken out any notion of a love triangle or love story in general.
Oh, absolutely. There's, like, just the notion of affection for one another, but they kept it very PG. It's more so G, just rated G, because there's really no kissing, even though I'll give you a kiss, it's just only just a thimble. It's not an actual... kiss on the lips. But in a lot of different adaptations, there are different versions of the kiss, and I like how they keep their relationship still somewhat, you can say, platonic, because it doesn't feel right when Peter would have a love life, for being the character in his story. He always wants to be by himself, have his own adventures, and to be attached to someone.
Well, I think it's even less being attached to someone. It's usually, like, falling in love is a sign of maturity. It's a sign of, you know, coming of age. And he can't grow up. So if he falls in love, which is kind of the whole notion of Hook, then he grows up.
Yeah.
And so we can't have that. Can't fall in love. Falls in love, he grows up. Speaking of which, let's... do you want to start diving into the various iterations that... have been adapted from J.M. Barrie's?
Yeah, there's so many. We'll start with probably one of the better known ones, the Disney Peter Pan cartoon animated version back in 1953. 53! It's now been, what, 55 years since we were doing? Or no, it's been
more than that.
75 years?
A little closer to...
I'm terrible with numbers, so I'm around that age. That number from Disney, like, really finally got the rights to talk the story of Peter Pan. And, you know, Walt Disney himself, he produced it. And it was the 14th Disney animated features from RKO Pictures, Radio Pictures.
Absolutely. And it's the one that, you know, as you talked about, is really well known, I think. When we had the discussion about passing down this story, this is the one that most people pass down and watch with their kids.
Mm-hmm. This is the one I grew up with. It is iconic. It is fun. It appeals to the children because it is animated and it's Disney. And Disney is going to outlive every single one of us anyways. So, and I'm glad that Disney did this film so well that it took them decades to do any adaptation of Peter Pan.
Yeah, the what works is obviously the musical numbers, but the fact that Peter is kind of arrogant but not overly cocky like in the book. And I think they do a better job of stringing the various things together. You know, from one to the other, as you mentioned, like we're at the lagoon, then Tiger Lily, then seeing the Indians and so forth. Like it all ties together quite well. And even just using sort of Tink's dissatisfaction of Wendy to a greater advantage.
Oh yeah.
In the movie. I think that played well into it. So, a lot of good stuff there with that.
Absolutely.
So that was 1953, and it has stood the test of time.
65 years. I was in between.
See, that's why I told you. Somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between. 65 years since we do this show.
Kind of congruently along with that, in 1954, Mary Martin did a musical version of it that has been done numerous times. In 1960, it actually aired on television and in color, which was kind of cool to see. In fact, you want to raise that volume, Juliet, in the booth? This is Mary Martin singing I Can Fly.
One day when you're sleeping in your silly bed, you might be flying about with me, saying funny things to the stars.
How do you do it?
This was a big production. I remember watching this, and, you know, each scene is like 20 minutes long because they have to use the entire set piece. And not just for, like, in and out.
Yeah.
See,
and that's such a big thing to be flying on stage, because it is high production, you can say, quote-unquote, high production value to have rigging involved.
Mm-hmm. And this play in particular has been done so many different ways. I mean, it's even current. Or as current with Christopher Walken and so forth.
Mm.
Like the fact that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I like it because we see a woman play Peter Pan, and it's generally usually a woman who portrays Peter Pan, even though Peter Pan is quote unquote a guy. They usually use women for the stage production because women tend to weigh less. And they're easier to rig and pull up on ropes. That's why generally they have the woman fly.
There you go. I would have just used the boy.
Yeah, but that was, I know that's one of the main reasons why they used women as Peter Pan, just because they're lighter to fly around stage.
Look at that. You learn something new every day.
Yeah, that's that theater knowledge.
Yeah. Well, after that, we don't necessarily get too much until Hook comes along. Which, Hook is hit or miss with a lot of people. And, you know, from an idealistic standpoint, I understand that it can be a miss because the opening line pretty much is some boy, you know, everyone grows up except one boy, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole notion of Hook is that Peter grew up.
Yeah, Peter grew up. And but the great thing about Hook is that it is somewhat of a more of an original story of Peter Pan that we know of since we got the, you know, original. And it was a nice take to see a different version of Peter Pan as an adult, because that is the whole story. You never grow up. Peter Pan never grows up. And then you start with an adult Peter Pan. You're like, wait, what's happening? And that just piques the audience interest. It's like, what happened to Peter Pan that would make him become an adult? And you just go in from there. And Steven Spielberg is obviously a genius in and of himself. So, and then Robin Williams, back in his heyday in the 90s, and he's
Dustin
huge.
Hoffman, Julia Dustin Roberts.
Hoffman, and I was like, that is such, that's still a star-studded cast in 1991. So, just, it had already a lot going for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think they use the themes available to them in the best of ways. Like you said, you know, why would Peter grow up? You know, and in that sense, like, Peter's compared to a pirate. You know, he's an acquisitions lawyer, and he acts like a pirate. And so he's kind of become Hook in that way. And then how does he regain his innocence while being, you know, an adult and having had grown up? And I think the movie in particular speaks well to your notion of, like, we pass things down.
Yeah. And it's also, like, you can't, just because you grew up doesn't mean that you can't make time to play with your children or forget your childhood and past and have fun. Like, go tap back into that childlike innocence. And, like, that is what Hook does so well. It takes Peter a few days to actually remember everything.
Yeah.
So it was very realistic. Like, he's not going to remember in just, like, an hour.
No, and, you know, it kind of plays the flip side of in Neverland, you forget, but then in the real world, he forgot Neverland.
Mm-hmm.
Which is similar to, you know, Wendy in the book. She started to forget about Neverland until it was her daughter, Jane, that kept reminding her, you know, hey, remember this, remember this.
Right. Also, and the thing with Hook, too, that they did so well is that Peter Pan had kids of his own. So there was also a bigger, you can say he had a bigger thing that he could lose. There's a bigger obstacle for him.
Yes, and I think, you know, for the people that don't necessarily love it, I get that it's not a perfect movie, but there's a magic to it, and the fact that the last line pretty much is, to live is an awfully great adventure. Like, there's just something amazing in that sentiment.
All right. Or, well, also the line in the book is, to die would be an awfully big adventure.
And that's also in the movie as well.
Yeah.
Strike true. Good form.
Good form.
And all these things, and you know, in particular for me, reading the book strengthened Hook because I understood where certain things were coming from that weren't overly explained in the movie.
Right. And you can understand why Hook has such a disdain for Peter Pan, too. Because when you read the book, Peter Pan is an annoying kid. And when you're an adult, he's like, go away, child, you know? Like, you can understand why Peter Pan really annoyed Hook.
Which is, you know, his kids, Peter's kids, actually were annoying him. And so it's, again, he became a pirate.
He became an adult. Yeah.
Indeed. All right, so then we get to kind of a couple of things. Return to Neverland, which is a sequel to Peter Pan. It's about Jane being taken away. Now, unlike Jane in the book, she doesn't really believe in the Neverland. She's very skeptical and yada, yada, yada. And the fact that she's taken away, you know, it's kind of like it's a whole rescue mission.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually have not seen this one. It's one of the more lesser known ones, I guess.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. It's one of those direct to, at this time, VHS/DVD time. So
DVD was so advanced.
It's so advanced. And when this came out in 2002, it kind of passed our generation, so to speak. I never returned to Neverland for this either. So yeah, I missed it.
After that, We get Finding Neverland.
Yes.
So this isn't necessarily an adaptation of Peter Pan. It's more so the real life. Well, it's a biopic of creating Peter Pan, starring Johnny Depp, of course.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed this because I watched this when it first came out. I was young, so I was like the age of the kids in this movie. So, like, I really enjoyed it because I always appreciate when you find the real story behind the inspiration of something magical like Peter Pan. So it made me have a deeper appreciation for J.M. Barrie, who he is as a person, and what the Llewellyn Davis boys did and helped conceive and the story for JM, and I really like just finding where like amazing things start from, the originality point, the origin point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and so Mark Forster did this one, which he just directed Christopher Robin, so I know that timestamps it a little bit, but
yeah.
So it's certainly within his wheelhouse of these types of movies, and I think it's obviously it's not the story of Peter Pan, but it is the story of Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. It's just as magical, ultimately.
Yeah, and just like the influence, because even J.M. Barrie needed, you know, creation and other people giving him inspiration too. Yes, he's a writer, but he needed to write off of things he knew.
Yeah, absolutely. Also around this time, Peter Pan by Universal and Columbia did the most faithful adaptation, as has been noted, of Peter Pan. It's a lot more darker, like both visually and everything else, tonally. I actually like this one a lot. It's fun. It's live action.
Yeah.
And I think it works well.
I saw it years ago. I remember when it first came out, and I just remember Jason Isaac being so scary. Like, he was an actual true villain of Captain Hook, because I feel, yes, Dustin Hoffman was great as Captain Hook, but I remember Jason Isaac being, like, scary in this version of Peter Pan.
Yeah, and it's funny enough that he played the dual role of Mr. Darling as well,
mm-hmm.
who, for all intents and purposes, at the beginning certainly is scary.
Yeah,
where's my cufflinks?
Right, but if you also think about it, sometimes children are afraid of their own parents, so they would imagine their worst enemy also be their, like, their parent.
Mm-hmm. Tis true. All right, then I actually got you onto this, but the Neverland series. So it's a 2-part miniseries. It's a kind of like a prequel, where Peter and Hook start off as best friends, and then this is sort of deteriorates. They come into Neverland. It's a very interesting take. I think it's a lot of fun. Now, granted, it suffers from its budgetary constraints a little bit, but if you just use your imagination, you can fill in the gaps. It has Keira Knightley in it as a pirate, so that's fun.
And the voice of Tinkerbell. I enjoyed Neverland. I've seen it a couple times. I thought it was cool because they took a lot of what we know of the original story of Peter Pan, but changed it just ever so slightly to make it seem more supernatural than it really is, than magic. Just supernatural. Like, Neverland is, like, you have to go through a portal to get through Neverland, not, like, flying into the sky. It's like you have to hit an orb to get there. I like it. It's cool. The different locations of this particular Neverland, way more scary than the versions that we've seen. Like, they have to climb trees, and the caves look like you take one step and you're going to fall to your death.
Yeah, and Peter's not flying in this.
No.
Not yet.
And I do like how they had to take, like, the human boy out of London and how he eventually became the Peter Pan that we know. It's not just this mystical boy who was already from Neverland. He's like, no, he started off as human. And I like that because it takes what we know but changes it just a little bit.
Yeah, the Lost Boys, they were all under the care of Hook. They were all in London. Jimmy. They were together as like a band of thieves, and you know they ate what they stole, and that was kind of it. And through this magical possibility, you know, a life takes a turn.
Yeah, and I like how they also built the story of Jimmy, quote-unquote, James, because it is James Hook, that they actually built a backstory to Peter Pan's, or Peter's father, that Jimmy was the reason why he died and all that. So, like, it naturally built a reason why there's a disconnect between them and why they become natural rivals. And, like, but it's very believable, too. You're like, yeah, if you killed my father, I'd have some beef against you, too.
Yeah, that happens. So, check it out if you haven't. It is available in several places. If you just type in Neverland miniseries, you can get a copy of it. It's like a 3-hour movie.
It's fun. It's actually fun, though. It's good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun revisionist-esque prequel.
Yes.
Now, another sort of prequel was Pan. And by God, this was a terrible movie.
I didn't watch it because I heard it was such a terrible movie. And I love Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman plays a pirate, not Hook. There's Rooney Mara, and she plays Tiger Lily, which she got a lot of flack for.
Yes.
It's just bad. I don't know how to describe it apart from it's just bad.
I saw a clip from it, and it was the clip where I believe Blackbeard, you know, played by Hugh Jackman, was being introduced to everybody and like to the audience, and they're playing a song.
They're playing Nirvana.
Yeah, they're playing Nirvana song, which is
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
So not a song that you would see in Neverland, and just kind of takes away just the magical element that is Neverland and adds in reality to it, and it doesn't match. And I just saw one clip, I was like, yeah, nah, I'll pass.
Yeah, just do yourself a favor. You don't need to see this. I've saved you the trouble of 2 hours.
Skippable.
Very skippable. And it was supposed to, here's the thing, the concept is good. It was supposed to set up a fun sequel where, you know, a Hook and now Peter go at it and so forth. We're never going to get the sequel, obviously, because of how badly it did.
Yeah.
But it's such a missed opportunity. That's the real crux of the pain for me.
And what I enjoy, and one adaptation that I really enjoyed, I watched, but I believe you haven't.
No, I did not.
Once Upon a Time, the television show, the ABC version, in the second and end of the second, beginning and all through the third season of Once Upon a Time, they had the character of Peter Pan. They went to Neverland. I mean, Captain Hook was already introduced to Once Upon a Time, but then they eventually went to Neverland. That was the land they got lost in for season 3. And we had Peter Pan and his Lost Boys, but they actually did a darker twist on Peter Pan. He was actually a nemesis, which the original content, like Peter Pan technically is the nemesis, but you always like him and stuff. And this Peter Pan, he was the actual villain of season 3. And he was played by Riley Kay, but very well done, because you don't expect it. He starts off actually nice and innocent to gain the trust of, you know, the charming family from Once. He's nice to them to gain the trust, but then he eventually turns on them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, Peter Pan, you evil boy.
Wicked evil boy.
Yeah. Great adaptation of a character that we thought was going to be a good guy.
Well, maybe one day I will check it out.
Yeah, there you go.
If you want to go into the archives in our AfterBuzz TV Once Upon a Time after show, Marissa does an amazing breakdown of each of the episodes. So yeah. Start with season 1 and then just continue on. Till Neverland.
Yeah, second star to the right, straight on till morning. Just keep going.
That's right. Might take you all morning to catch up, but that's okay.
Right.
You got time.
I talked about every single one of those episodes, so yeah.
All right, so now let's shift gears and let's talk about your favorite portrayal of the character. Usually we kind of dissect it and say, okay, did we think this person matched up with what was in the book? The fun part with an episode like this is you get to pick your favorite portrayal. It can be for so. Let's hold off on Peter, right? We'll save him.
Okay.
Let's start with the hopefully easier ones, Mr. and Mrs. Darling.
I love them in because I only grew up with like 3 main ones. I love the Disney's version, 1953, because I remember Mr. Darling constantly yelling at the kids, taking Nana outside, putting her on the leash. I was like, what are you doing? The dog doesn't deserve to be outside. So I remember just being upset at Mr. Darling, but that was the character. You're not supposed to like Mr. Darling. And then the wife just being super nice and tolerant of it all. So I think they definitely got the essence of the parents in that.
Yeah, for me it was either that or the Mary Martin musical, because I think they were just so true to kind of who they were and whatnot. They're just overall fun. For Toodles, I like the Hook version. I've lost my marbles.
Yeah, lost my marbles. Same here. Because I also rewatched Hook. I was like, Toodles is so fun. And just the little taking on the line of losing his marbles, but then getting them back and finding his innocence and going back to Neverland, you're like, aw, toodles. Yeah, I loved him too.
All right. What about Tiger Lily?
Tiger Lily? I would have to say definitely the Disney version too, because she was fun. She didn't talk a lot.
No.
But she did play a key part in everybody saving her.
Yeah, that's the Tiger Lily I most remember. I'm trying to think back to the Peter Pan movie, not the 53 one, but the live action one. My answer is certainly not going to be Pan, played by Rooney Mara. Not, unfortunately, that was terrible. So, yeah, I guess I would say the Disney one or the Peter Pan one, although I can't quite fully remember that. All right, what about John and Michael?
John and Michael. I loved the boys that played in the Peter Pan live musical that just came out a few years ago. I think they were great. They definitely had the age down, and they sang as well. They were fun. I found them more realistic because I think they were just humans that I could follow.
Fair enough. This one's a tough one. I'm going to go with the 53 version on this one, just sort of by default. Although the Mary Martin one, I think they have more expanded roles, so I think they could be fun. But yeah, I guess the 53 version, the fact that they're like Michael in particular, he kind of emulates Peter in that way, right? Like that's what he's there for, and he's just so proud of himself for doing these things. So I think that's a fun version too.
Yeah, I think I liked the Peter Pan musical, the live musical one, more personally, because I had watched their audition process. That was one of the specials that they had before the actual production went live. They showed the behind the scenes of the process of the two boys actually going through the audition process, getting going through all their callbacks, and then like I saw them actually earn their role. And then when I saw them perform, I was like, yeah, they're it.
Well, speaking of this is a great opportunity to also let our fans know, that's you, that you can comment and let us know your favorite portrayals, your favorite adaptation and kind of history and with Peter Pan, anything of that nature. We're curious. You know, that's why we do this. It's our online book club. Yes, Marissa and I talk, but you get to participate just as equally. Mm-hmm. We'll read it. We'll comment and all that stuff. But moving on, Smee. What about me?
I love Smee in the 1953 version because he's so freaking funny. especially the scene where he's like shaving Captain Hook's neck, and then he's actually shaving the bird, and the bird flies away. He's like, "Oh, dear! I've never shaved this close before." And he actually thinks he kills Peter Pan or took off his head. It's hysterical as a cartoon character.
Yeah, to me, it's either between him or the one from Hook, simply because Smee is just a fun character because he placates to Hook's just ridiculousness oftentimes.
Yeah.
And that's what I absolutely love. So I'll go with Hook on this one just to be different than you.
Okay.
Smee, what about me?
Smee.
All right. Captain Hook.
Captain Hook. I mean, I love Dustin Hoffman. He's amazing. I think he's the most iconic version for me, even though I said Jason Isaac was, like, realistic scary. Mm-hmm. Dustin Hoffman in Hook. I mean, the movie's called Hook. It's not called Peter Pan. It's called Hook. And I think he just embodies that role.
After all, what would the world be like without Captain Hook?
Without Captain Hook.
Yes, and Dustin Hoffman, just phenomenal actor, obviously. So, I'm actually going to go with Neverland on this one because I think Jimmy, it's just a different version of Hook, okay, and it's just fun to see that side of it. So I appreciated that version, although Dustin Hoffman, again, very, very iconic.
Yes.
All right. For all the marbles. Oh, actually, we skipped Wendy.
Oh, yeah, Wendy.
Gotta talk Wendy.
Yeah, I did like Wendy in the 1953 version because she was young, she was innocent. You felt for her when the mermaids tried drowning. She was the mother when she sang the song, that lullaby song. I liked her. She's exactly what Wendy should be.
I liked her, although my number two is from Hook, just because she's I love Maggie Smith and kind of saying, like, you know, the stories are true. Although my top one is from the Peter Pan live action one.
Okay.
Just because it's fun to see a real life Wendy.
Yeah.
You know? All right. Peter Pan himself.
Peter Pan.
Ooh. Who is your top Peter Pan portrayal?
Goodness, goodness. Well, I've mentioned it several times. I think the 1953 Disney version is like so ingrained into my childhood. Mm-hmm. When I hear the name Peter Pan, I automatically think this character. And it's a Disney character. It's an animated character, but he looks like a mystical creature elf, but also like a boy. He could fly. He was funny at times. This is the Peter Pan of my generation, in my opinion.
Fair enough. I'm going to highlight the biggest missed opportunity. Pan. I thought the actor who played him was a great actor to play the role of Peter Pan. Just the story did not fit him. So going off of what did fit, I'll actually say Mary Martin. I think she has this playfulness about her where it's not cockiness, but nonetheless, she embodies it quite well without going too far.
Okay. Now I have to watch this version.
You should.
I should. I love musicals too, so.
All right, so as we wrap out, let's also highlight the what's that?
What about Tinkerbell?
Tinkerbell.
Julia Roberts,
of course.
She's
so good.
And popular contrary belief, the original Tinkerbell was not drawn after Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, I can see where people would make that a correlation. But I think Julia Roberts was just so good at Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
And she got to play like two different kinds of people. I mean, she played the fairy size, but she did get her wish in playing a human size. So she got two different versions of a Tinkerbell that we're not used to seeing.
Now, she was a lot more. Fairies in the book are very one-minded. They're either angry or happy.
Yeah. She was very humanized, too, because you can tell that she played with the Lost Boys. She encouraged Peter to find his innocence again. She was a through line throughout all of Hook.
Yeah, she. I mean, she's the one who brought him to Neverland.
Exactly. She was such a big character in Hook.
Indeed. All right, so as far as the legacy, something that you guys were talking about before we went on air, this is how far Peter Pan extends. Number one, I knew about the statue in London. So that in and of itself is quite an accomplishment. But you know you've made it when Mary-Kate and Ashley make a movie. Not necessarily based on you, but make it a point to be a plot point in your movie to go see the statue with Peter Pan. So much so that Julia, our engineer, went to London and saw the Peter Pan statue. Not because of the Peter Pan statue, but because of Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Duh.
I mean, I totally would as well. Mary-Kate and Ashley were a staple in my 90s childhood. I was part of their fan club. Yeah, you bet it. I had a monthly package from them every single month.
Hilarious.
Yep, true story.
I had their toothpaste.
Yes.
Well, this ain't about American Nashville.
We can get into that.
All right. Unless it was Peter Pan toothpaste, that's as far as we're going today with American Nashville.
Yeah, but to go off of the legacy of J.M. Barrie and Peter Pan also, that at his death, J.M. Barrie's death, he gave the copyright to the story of Peter Pan to a London children's hospital. It was the Ormond Street Hospital in 1929. And they had the rights to the story. And all the royalties.
Yeah, there's been a lot of copyright issue because of that fact.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of headaches, but luckily it's overall sorted out. And you know what? I'm always down for a good Peter Pan story. So if you got them, make them.
Yeah.
I will read, watch, whatever you got. Anyway, the final thing that we have to tell you is, of course, what book/movie we're going to do next, which is Cold Mountain.
Yeah.
So you have a whole month to read the book, to check out the movie. It's one movie. It's one book. So unlike this, it's, you know.
It's a long movie. I'll let you know. It's actually one of my favorite movies, so this is why we're covering it.
Look at that. But she has never read the book.
Never read the book, but I love the movie so much that hopefully I love the book too.
So check it out. Also, pun intended, we are building up our library. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've been going for quite a number of months. Slow and steady wins the race type of thing. So if there's any movies / books from the past, like, for example, we did Princess Bride last time around, which, believe it or not, is a book. Because why else would we be talking about it on this show? So, you know, do yourself a favor. If you've read the book, you've seen the movie or whatnot, go back in our archives and check it out.
Yeah. And, you know, Princess Bride is so legendary. Also, I rewatched the sword scene, the sword fighting scene yesterday. It's just so good. I dropped everything. As I was supposed to be reading this book, I dropped everything to rewatch that scene.
All right. So good. I don't know how necessarily feel about that, but at least you've read this book, so kudos.
There you go.
All right. In the meantime, you can interact with us on a personal level at Serafini TV.
That's right.
If you love books as well, Marissa does a When Calls the Heart series for the TV show, which, of course, is also based on the books.
Book series, yes.
So Chesapeake Shores.
Also based on a book series as well.
Indeed. So check that out. I'm at Phil Svitek. You can follow me there. I do a weekly series where I teach lessons. Marissa's going to be on my latest one doing something quite special. So yes. Check out that. That's Phil Svitek podcast. Juliet is one of the producers on that. Shout out to her. She's at Bonjour Juliet. Might as well say that. And last, but certainly not least, if you like what me and Marissa do, we do it for movies specifically on a weekly basis through our Anatomy of a Movie series. So we dissect movies from a behind-the-scenes perspective, from a story perspective. So check it out, Anatomy of a Movie. We do it for current movies primarily. We interviewed Selena Tan from Crazy Rich Asians, and we'll be covering the full dissection this Friday for Crazy Rich Asians, which is also a book. Anyway, we'll see you next time. Bye!
Executive producers Kevin Undergaro, Maria Menounos, and Jeffrey Masters. Thanks for tuning in to Book Circle Online. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment. To suggest a book title or their author, you can tweet us at Book Circle On. This is Book Circle Online. Thanks for tuning in. Expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.